Welcome to Web to Paths. We're a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I'm Mark, and my co-host is Ben.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about customer care. Should we care? Do you care?
Yes.
Well, it's interesting because this was inspired by a tweet from Andy Clark of Stuff and Nonsense Design Agency and of the...
Gorillaz,
yeah, he's a bit of an ape fan and co-host of the Unfinished Business podcast. There we go. And he tweeted this: the next person to say that to be a good designer you need to care for people gets a punch in the face. Subtle as always. But I just kind of thought it was interesting because there is this kind of notion that in certain types of industries you have to care for people, and it seems to go beyond the idea of just doing a good job for someone. It seems to be this kind of, there's a certain type of language
which nurturing is, kind of, because this emotional, the idea of emotional design and what's it called, not sympathy, empathy.
Yeah.
I know he's had big rants about the idea of using empathy in design before, so I think it's a bit of a he's got a problem with it.
He's got a problem
but
with
it. But I can understand, yeah, it's bringing it into a different area, isn't it? It's
yeah.
Using words that you'd normally use to describe close or intimate relationships between people, family, friends, and they're bringing it into the arena of a client.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I wonder why that happens. I think there seems to be this general inflation of superlatives, that everything has to be awesome. And there's a company around here in Cheltenham, and they're a laundry company. And I see their vans driving about, and their strap line is passionate about your laundry. And it always makes me feel a bit queasy.
That's a bit worrying, isn't it?
I don't want anybody to be passionate around my laundry. Yeah.
Discreet, maybe.
Yeah, I'd probably have to send it back to get cleaned again if they were passionate around it. And another thing that when they first came out, there's a brand of smoothies in the UK called Innocent Smoothies. Tasty smoothies. But when I first started reading the carton, we're drinking a very delicious pomegranate...
Is that mine?
Yeah, that's yours.
You filled me up again. Thanks.
I did, yeah. A very delicious pomegranate, blueberry and acai smoothie. Very tasty. But if you start reading the box, it's like it's trying to make friends with you. And just the sort of the language is... I mean, I won't read it out because I'm not going to read a packet out because that's a bit lame. But it's odd because... where is the division? Like with products, when does a product become an experience? And at what threshold of product should it be an experience? If you're driving a BMW, you understand how that is something slightly more than a product. There is maybe a different amount of emotions you have attached to your car.
Yeah.
But when you're having a smoothie,
is that the target? Is that what the marketing team or agency behind it are going for? They're actually trying to make you associate this product with your lifestyle and the good parts of your lifestyle, as opposed to just being a product.
Yeah, and I think that kind of thinking, I wonder if that kind of thinking is making its way into our industry, that we're thinking of it being more of an experience, more of a journey, more of a kind of a spiritual awakening. Because I think, and people, when they talk about the web, it's an amazing thing, and it allows people to connect with each other. It allows people who possibly would have been isolated to have access to other people, to have access to services, to information. And building websites is kind of can be seen as important in some ways because it's important to people's businesses. If you're working for a charity, I know you've done some charity work before, haven't you? That's important, like real world worthy stuff. But we're providing a service, and I just wonder sort of where, like, that divide comes. Because I understand what Andy Clark is saying, because I don't think he's saying that when you design, you don't care, and all you're interested in is a paycheck. But, like, I think, actually, because I tweeted back to him, I guess there are degrees of care. You can do a good job for someone without wanting to hug their heart. And he said... yeah, and he said exactly, it's the happy, huggy, hand-wavy crap that gets my goat. So when you've been designing or developing, like, is it something that you're aware of, like the degree of care you have for the client or the job that you're doing?
I suppose a lot of Are there going to be two sides of this? There's the initial side about the whole design and understanding the product, understanding the people the product has to relate to, and therefore making it appeal to them. And that's caring for the people who are benefiting from using the product.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also the care and understanding side of the client. Which is it, both of these that he was sort of
talking about,
do you think?
I think he's talking, maybe both of them. I think maybe he's talking about, or we're talking about, your a designer or developers or UX designer or whatever, their attitude when they're approaching a client and a job. Because I think, I don't know if it's just that word, whether care just has the wrong kind of implications, because you can be, sorry, that's my stomach rumbling, if you wonder what that was, that we have not just let an angry dog into the room. Professionalism seems to be, I don't know, it seems to be undervalued, because you can do a professional job and for some reason... it seems like a slightly more cold term to be professional. Whereas I think part of being professional is doing that, is doing a good job. Like you were saying, if you're designing an if you're designing a website that users are going to use, you have to think about what they want. So it demands a certain amount of empathy, I guess. But I think these words just have a slightly odd connotation.
Yeah, it's like they've been taken out of context from what they've always been usually applied to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if we're all just trying to keep up with the whole of the marketing media industry generally. Everyone's advert is trying to, sort of repeating myself, trying to make you feel that this is part of your lifestyle, trying to make you feel that that company really, really super amazingly cares about you.
Yeah.
And your awesomeness.
Yeah.
So are we then trying to treat our clients like that?
Yeah.
We're not just going to build you a really well functioning product, we're also going to love you.
Yes.
And we're going to love your product, and even after you've paid us and you're long gone and there's no maintenance at all, we're still going to check in every now and again to check that it's all still okay and do a little bit of massaging of code here and there.
Yeah,
we might even update your corporate ID
let's go for a drink, let's go to Planet Hollywood, let's hire a balloon. But yeah, I think so. But it's interesting actually, because I was reading, sort of coming back to the Innocent Smoothie, I was reading the packet, and it didn't seem quite as egregious as it did when I first saw one a few years ago. But because that kind of thinking just seems to have come into so many things that you kind of don't notice it anymore. And I wondered to what extent it's going to start to become a requirement. But I just wanted to ask you, when you're taking on a new product, what expectation do you think the client has of this, of care, of the nature of the relationship that you're going to have with them?
I suppose it's hard to know. I can only base it on feedback I get from them and what seems to work or doesn't. But it seems to me that, especially from the technical side of a project, they're most concerned with me understanding the requirement really well. And then when we're having meetings about it, or we're drafting up specs and we're talking about new features and things, that often being able to second guess them scores very highly. Or saying, well, how about this? And they're like, yeah, that's spot on. That is exactly what we wanted. So, or they're not. And they're a bit upset if you say, well, how about this? And they say, you clearly don't understand what we're actually trying to achieve here. So, but in terms of buddy-buddy, being friendly to them as a person, that's obviously helpful. But being really friendly and actually trying to establish an ongoing relationship, I've never had felt that that was definitely not expected or even wanted.
That's interesting.
I think it could get in the way a little bit. I do have... last year, I did a project for someone that I never completed. I was half paid for. It was a very friendly, hey, let's meet for coffee and go through this. And I think in the end, I probably just didn't build it quick enough, or I didn't build what they were wanting. They didn't feel that they could say to me, this is wrong. Possibly also because I was a kind of a friend of theirs. And we ended up just parting ways. I kind of just never heard from them again. Didn't chase it up because I was so busy. I'm still not quite sure what happened. And I suppose one day I should probably contact them and say, right, I realise I did something very wrong, or the project went very wrong. And effectively, I kind of owe you some money because you paid me for something that actually never went live. What was it? And I wonder now, talking about this, I'm thinking as I'm speaking, which is never a good idea. I'm wondering if that is why.
Because we were
quite friendly. Maybe that was the problem.
I wonder if that is then. I wonder if maybe developing too close a relationship with the person that you're working for. Because I've had that actually with just people, because we've been doing a lot of work on our flat recently, and there are times when you have somebody come in to do a job for you and you get on well and you think you kind of spark up a bit of a rapport, and if they do something wrong, you're a bit like, oh, we'll let it go and I'll sort it out when they've gone. And then maybe you end up not ever using that person again for a job because you just feel like you can't say it to them. Whereas I guess it's, what is it, the when you're dealing with somebody over the internet, there's a dehumanizing effect, disinhibition
right.
of the internet. Like if somebody sells you something bad over the internet, you can be quite straight with them.
Yeah.
And maybe that means that you end up getting what you want and that person at the other end eventually gets a satisfied customer. So I guess from our standpoint then, you want your client to be able to tell you what they really think of a product.
Yeah.
Rather than think, oh, I can't say that to him because he's so nice. And we've been getting on so well.
Yeah.
So I wonder if maybe that kind of, again, that huggy, hand-wavy kind of stuff can actually get in the way of delivering a sound product.
And the other way round, I remember when I used to work in customer support for a credit card terminal processing type company, it was actually quite annoying when the customers phoned you up and they were really pally, because you were thinking, this is nice, but I know that what you're going to try and do is get me to do this or put you through to that person or do... Some of them were just nice, but a lot of them were trying to be super pally and friendly because they wanted to get extra special support out of you, and you just knew that from your point of view it's a numbers game. You've got hundreds of calls coming in, hundreds of problems to deal with. And I've noticed myself, I tend to be quite chatty to people, say, you know, phoning up for new car insurance and they've got to phone you and say, can I just check your details? And if I'm chatty or friendly, sometimes they're very because they actually just need to get through the thing and make their next call. So professionalism isn't necessarily linked to friendliness.
No, because I found that when I've been dealing with people selling me car insurance, or like I would always fill up the space where they're typing stuff in, I'd always feel like I need to chat to them.
Yeah.
And yeah, you would get that, you get them, but now I just stay quiet.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can stay quiet for a minute or half a minute.
Yeah.
And it feels kind of uncomfortable, but things seem to kind of work well and the call takes a lot less time, and you know, so yeah, that is interesting. So maybe there needs to be a certain amount of, not distance, but just room to be professional, room to actually say, hey, this isn't working.
With companies like Innocent and other companies who, Rackspace, I love Rackspace and I'm very happy with them. We've still got hosting with them and they're great. Their tagline is, or was, fanatical support, which is odd, but they seem to stick by that. But it's quite a pressure to say that. And like with Innocent, to say, we love you, and if you want to pop in for a cup of tea, because one of the early days, it used to say where they were and pop by.
Yeah.
If you want, how many hundreds of thousands of people are actually going to pop by at some point? They're going to be like, we didn't really mean it. It was just our marketing department put it on our box.
Or maybe there is somebody downstairs with hundreds of tea. Cups, just crying to themselves, where's anybody coming around?
Maybe we should make it our goal to go and see them.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna make statements like that, you need to be prepared to stick by them, don't you?
And I think that's the thing that I think puts people off, if it's phony. Like you were saying, like if people are phoning you up.
Like energy companies.
Yeah.
Phoning you. We love you. No, you're not having that back. Yes, we are going to charge you twice or we're taking you to court. Oh, great. You loved me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of really jars when the reality of what their customer service approach actually is kicks in.
Yeah.
And I think, like you were saying, when you've got, you know, when you're working in support, people are phoning you up and you know they're being friendly because they're working an angle, it just makes you quite suspicious. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if us in the design, development, whatever industry, if we just ladle that stuff on a bit too thick, it's going to make people a bit suspicious of what we're trying to do. And plus, again, you might be kind of just making your decision making down the road a bit difficult because you know, if you've made a friend, like we said in the past, if you're building a website for a friend, it can be quite a tricksy, can't it?
Yeah.
And I guess you don't want to turn your customers into friends because then you'll be dealing with those
all the time.
So what we'll do is we'll take a pause there and we'll do a tool start. And then in part two, we'll try and talk about some of the practicalities of this.
Okay. So, which tool are you making a star this week?
Our star tool is Slack, which most people have probably heard of, but I just thought it was relevant to our topic today because we're talking about how us in this industry, we manage our relationships with people. And it's quite interesting seeing how that works. Like, I'm in the Slack, the Perch Slack channel. They've got a few channels, actually. They've got a general one, a show and tell, where people can put in just sites that they've done so other people can see. Yeah. They've got a community help channel and a useful links channel. Now, the general channel, as is so with Slack, is just chit-chat. And it's quite interesting because it's becoming a forum, in a way, for a community to develop. So I guess that may be a slightly different thing, because when you've got a product or service like a CMS, you want a community to grow up around it.
Yeah.
And you kind of want people to be friends because they're using your product, because then they can help each other out. And it's interesting how the makers of Perch, Drew and Rachel, how they interact with people, because in the community help one, it's a bit more like a support channel. And so they're often directing people to the actual support forum.
Yeah.
So there's a point at which something becomes more of an issue, more of a technical issue. So it has to be moved out of that context.
Yeah.
But for sort of general help with the community help, it's kind of often it's, oh, I want to do this interesting thing. How do I do that? And then if somebody's done it, they're like, oh, try this. I did this. And they don't feel like they need to get involved. But when they do get involved, like when the teacher comes back into the room,
mm-hmm.
You know, they might lead you off somewhere else.
Right.
So it's quite interesting because you're in one of the WordPress Slack channels, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I just signed up and it's quite interesting to see them rolling out things and talking about fixes and features.
And how do you, what's their approach to that then? I mean, how do you get the sense that, again, they're trying to foster a community?
I haven't spent long enough in that one. I've spent much more and spend most days I'm in the shop one. And I realise the WordPress one itself is massive and the one for the shop e-commerce plugin is small. But again, there are private groups just for the help desk staff.
In shop?
Yeah, but then there are also public groups and there are things like development and general and random. And random is, look at this picture of kittens. And general is, this would be kind of cool. I'd like to do this. Or can I do this? What do you think about this? And development is, there's a bug in the current version. I want to report it. How do I do it? Or in the next version, we'd like to see this, that, and the other. And it's kind of open development chat about, mainly about the next version between the developers, but it is public.
Hmm.
I think. Yeah, it is. They're not private groups. And you do have to herd, people do get herded from one to the other. And when we're chatting in there, often someone who's been there longer will say, you should take this to general, really. Or this is like, I think it would be better suited for random.
That's interesting. So I guess then...
It's just like IRC, because it's internet relay chat, which, you know, doesn't really get used anymore.
Yeah.
But it's the same sort of way you'd have channels. And the same way you can set a channel, what's it called? Topic, can't you? When you join the channel, when you open it at the top, it says what the discussion is, and that's quite helpful to use.
Mm. But I guess that's an interesting approach that a lot of these companies are developing, because I guess their use case is maybe slightly different than ours, because as a developer or designer, you're not trying to establish a community if you're building and designing websites. I mean, I guess you do want to have ongoing relationships with people. You hope customers will come back to you at some point.
Mm.
But you're not trying to, you know, you're not trying to kind of get people to meet up and, you know, wear your T-shirts necessarily and have conferences about the things that you do, maybe.
We did talk briefly about maybe opening up a Relative Paths Slack channel, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
And I think we differ on our opinion. Why would you want to do that?
I don't know. I was thinking it could be interesting to get some more direct feedback from listeners. Because with Twitter, it's a bit more ephemeral, isn't it? It's like it's gone, like quite quickly. And if you're not looking at your Twitter feed at the time, then often stuff passes you by. Yeah. But with a Slack channel, it gives you more chance to have a conversation. Because often in Twitter, if people are having a back and forth, it gets to the point where like it doesn't work so well on Twitter. Because if you come in on it and you're 39 kind of like replies in, you think, oh, I'm not. But with Slack, it's slightly different because, you know, you respond and it just works slightly differently.
Yeah.
But then I take your point that I think it's probably better
for diluting. Us. I think it dilutes people.
Yes.
Away from, you know, was it Luke Rabalski? I can't even say his name. How do I say it?
Luke.
Rabalski.
Oh, there we go.
It's with a W, though, which confuses me terribly right at the beginning. Anyway. He said that all applications... I think it was him. I hope I'm attributing that correctly.
Can't even say his name right. Don't know what he said.
No, all applications iterate or develop until they include chat.
Huh.
And it's kind of true, all applications and services. And it's every now and again, a new one does it. And he tweets about it and says, yep, Anna's one. You know, so the idea of direct messaging in Instagram wasn't initially of course, in Instagram, yeah. you know, yeah. and things like that. And most of them are, it's some sort of internal chat system. And it's taking you, trying to make you part of that product. And really, but it's also taking you away from some of the bigger Facebook, Twitter. And I would say, stick with Facebook. Well, I hate Facebook personally. But anyway, if it's a conduit that people use, use that and use Twitter.
Hmm.
Unless you're quite a big community of users. And I realize you want to build that, but we're not likely to ever have tens of thousands of people chatting in a relative fast chat room.
Yeah. Even with Perch, actually, there's like, I mean, I'm looking at if I go into the general channel, there are 223 people sort of registered to the general channel, which is a good chunk of people. But it's not like hundreds of thousands. So I guess we're not, yeah. It's probably not a good use case for us. I like the idea of everything having chat. I'm looking forward to the next time I'm at the ATM. You'll see it overdrawn. Lol.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Slack, that's our tool star of the week.
Okay.
Okay, we're back to part two of our main topic. So in this section, we might talk a bit more about the practicalities, about how we actually, sort of in real situations, manage a relationship. But we're interested to know your approach. So when you personally are, we spoke about it a bit in the first half, when you're approaching a customer, do you think about establishing boundaries? Are there points at which, you know, the relation, you sort of start to, the wall goes up? I don't mean if, like, you know, the customer's like, you know, touches your knee or anything, but I'd be like, you know, do you know what I mean? But at what point do you start taking a step back?
I do think about it, actually. And I think in the first few pieces of communication, if it's a brand new client or someone that's just approached you out of the blue, I suppose the same as if you go and try and pitch for a job. I don't tend to pitch for a job. It just happens to be, like, tends to be word of mouth. People tend to come to me. But anyway, first conversation with them, I do tend to think, right, how pally should I be? And I think establish that quite quickly through little things. From what they say, some people will sign off, please could you do this, they either address you by name or dear sirs type thing. I mean, you know pretty much if it's that, you know what kind of level they're at. And they might sign off regards or best regards or yours sincerely. Some people will sign off cheers, thanks. Some people, especially I think generally younger people or people that are already involved with the web industry, don't even do a formal sign off with things. So you can get an idea straight away from the manner of their text, email, phone call, how chatty they are. And I do worry about myself. I try and take the cue from them because I'm the sort of person that's likely to say, anyway, got to go now. My wife's just dishing up. And I realise to some people, they don't want to know that at all. And other people, they do. They're like, oh, yeah, what are you having? And you think, ah, right, this is, you're establishing then and there. And that's where you've got to make the choice, isn't it? That's where you've got to say just how much you say. Oh, I won't be able to call you Monday because I'm not available, or won't be able to call you Monday because I'm going to the dentist. Oh, I hate dentists. Even those little things, some clients will be like, right. And others will be, oh, yeah, me too. And something, oh, I remember when my daughter went for it. And you think, oh, right, here we go. It's almost a mate.
Yeah. Well, I guess again, there's a little bit of a kind of a blurry area between being civil to somebody and recognising their humanity and that they have other things that they're doing outside of the project. And you starting to develop an actual real life sort of friendship with them. I'm of the same mind. I try to take my cue from the person because I think, again, when we're talking about care and empathy, it's maybe not particularly caring and empathetic if you impose your standard of formality or informality on your client. If you're determined to be pally and, you know, you're going to go and sort of make daisy chains with each other and things like that, and the client really doesn't want that, then it's not being particularly empathetic if you continue to foist that kind of thing on them. But I had that same thing because Kate, my wife, had an exam last week, and so I took a day off my regular job. I can hardly say I've gone off. I've so mentally checked out of my window cleaning. I'm finding it so hard to keep my head in the game because I'm just at a pivot point where my web work is just starting to sort of happen, and I'm just, oh, it's tricky. But anyway, and I had a customer booked in, and so I decided I was going to take, well, Kate asked, well, I took the day off to go with Kate to her exam. And I was telling my customers why I couldn't come. I found myself texting, I can't come because my wife's going to an exam and I'm just going along to give her a bit of moral support instead. And I was like, oh, so that's a bit like, should I have mentioned that? Is that kind of bringing them in? And then she replied, okay, fine. And I thought, well, maybe I've been a bit over friendly. But then when I actually went and sort of did the job, she was like, oh, how did your wife get on? And oh, yeah, I hate exams and things like that. And it's sort of, oh, my phone has just leapt off the sofa onto my computer. I don't know if that's
like a grudge match. Who made that phone?
Yeah.
Who made that computer?
Is that kind of part of Apple's new update?
Yeah.
All phones will hurl themselves at Windows PCs. But it's interesting. Yeah, go on, sorry.
It's interesting. Everything's interesting.
Sorry.
My catchphrase. Now, talking about this, I think I'm just going to say here that I didn't have a great look at these show notes, partly okay. because of time. And also because sometimes it works better when you just ask me a question and I haven't pre-thought it. So I'm thinking about this as we're doing this now, and I'm wondering whether the decision I make is based on whether it's a one-off client or whether it's an agency that I'm likely to work with again. Probably half and half. Half of my work is people that they pass me work from their clients, and it's agencies I'm working for, or other developers or designers. And then half of my work is direct to an end user, which I generally say is not a very web savvy and not a very technical person, not an industry type.
Hmm.
And I think I'm much more professional with them.
With the customers.
Customers.
Yeah.
When I'm dealing with agencies and things. Being part of an agency is all about the slightly crazy things you all do and your personality. And I think I quite like that. And I get the impression with the agencies I deal with that they like that too. Because I like that about them. We know that so-and-so, who's the, I don't know, copywriter there, is off sailing this weekend because they love a bit of sailing.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I don't know anything about sailing. Whereas, you know, so we've all got a different... And it's nice to establish that kind of feeling of a group and a community building something. And it's the same with doing the support for the shop work, is we chat about what each other are into a little bit sometimes. We get to know each other a little bit, as well as doing the work. So I suppose it depends what kind of community you're trying to establish and what kind of support.
And I guess when you're dealing with other people who work on the web, we understand the culture. Like, you know that a lot of the people are going to be working from home. So it's a different kind of environment. It's a different mindset if somebody's working from home, because you know that they're going to be working on the web and then they're going to be off watching something on Netflix for a bit, or, you know, taking a dog out for a walk or, you know, sort of dealing with their homebrew or something like that. And I guess you know the culture. But if you're dealing with somebody from a different industry, the culture might be very different. If you're dealing with somebody who's a barrister or somebody who's in high finance or somebody who's a builder or somebody who's like in baking, or I guess when they're meeting with people in their own industry, they have already have things in common. So that rapport is kind of already half done. But if you're dealing with somebody, you know, that's basically a stranger to you. But I thought it was interesting about what you're saying about salutations and stuff like that, deciding on whether...
I was going to come back to that.
Yeah, whether you're formal or informal, because I don't think there is an established form necessarily with email.
No, I think it's quite important probably to establish what you're comfortable with going forward. And in some ways, using that as a little bit of a way of gauging whether this is the sort of person you want to be dealing with constantly. And I don't know if it's a bad idea and whether I will never know if I've ever lost a client due to it. But I nearly always start an email with morning so-and-so, or hi so-and-so, or hope you had a good weekend so-and-so, and I'll nearly always end it with cheers. Now, I wonder whether that's a bit like sending a job application in a brown envelope, whereas it probably gets put in the bin, you know, one of those old rules of thumb. I wonder whether I've lost clients because I signed off cheers. But the thing is, I'm going to be saying cheers. I'm going to be signing off that, or ta, or thanks, or chat to you later, or I'm just not a best regards type person. And actually, it annoys me, I must say. If I get an email and it's got best regards at the bottom, I think, you didn't even think about that. That's your signature. Which I know is a bit unfair, but especially if I get it from family. Sometimes family and then best regards. It's different. What do you mean best regards?
Best regards, warm regards. With my window cleaning customers, I tend to use best wishes. And I feel that's kind of... Yeah, it is a little bit. I do record a video of me doing that song from Pinocchio. When you wish upon a star.
Good thing this thing gets edited.
It is, yeah. But I always find, I always pause, even if it's just for half a second, whenever I'm doing my salutation, I'm always like... I'm not sure. Maybe you should give people like a drop-down list. Yeah. They can select from there which one they're comfortable with. But I think the conclusion... Oh, I was actually going to ask, before I say that thing I was going to say, about social media accounts, like separating those. Because I know we, you know, we've got our Relative Path Twitter feed. I've got my Pixel Smith's Twitter feed. But I've also got my personal one. So I separate three. Is that something you do? Do you kind of separate like a social and a work account? Because a lot of people, I think maybe a lot of people at the higher end of the design, you know, the ones that are more high profile, tend to roll it all into one because I guess they can.
Yeah, I've thought about rolling it into one, but I realise if you roll it into one, you're sort of assuming that the people that are following you because of your technical output also want to know about your fishing trip. And sometimes that's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there are people we follow, and some of their posts will be of a technical nature, and some of it is just about their lifestyle. And it sounds a bit harsh, but sometimes I don't necessarily... I follow, say, on Instagram or on my personal Twitter account, my friends and people I spend time with, or accounts that I'm really interested in their output from a hobby point of view. Whereas on my mid-development Twitter account, I'm following the accounts of frameworks, bits of software, industry types... who are hosting useful and interesting things. And it might be because I've decided to separate what it's like, I think you have, our sort of personal and our business lifestyle. But some people don't. And so some people are working so many hours a week, it is their life, aren't they? There is their whole output is. And some of them are tweeting about things at 1, 2, 3 in the morning with some framework they've just released an update for. And I think, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see it.
Get some sleep.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think you, I guess we all have an individual threshold of how much interest, because you don't, you know, you acknowledge that people are human, like behind the products and software services and things that you follow.
Yeah.
You know that it's people, and you know that these people have lives. And it's not as if you, you necessarily just have no human interest in them, because sometimes it's nice to sort of, to know that this person has, you know, is off on their fishing trip. But if then... it's 22 tweets, you know, when they've, you know, they've caught like a nice bream or something like that. You sort of, after a while, you think of, you know,
this isn't giving them all that, like, all, like you say, 22 pictures of my different homebrews.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with.
I guess it's your weight, isn't it? Like, because I think on a personal Twitter feed, you might tweet about work a little bit.
Yeah.
And on your work Twitter feed, you might tweet about your personal life a little bit. And I guess people, you know what people are following you for. Again, like when we're designing websites or building websites, that's what the relationship is for, is to provide that service. So anything you do that gets in the way of that, including being over-friendly and including being a little bit too remote as well. I tend to think, I don't think it's a wishy-washy stance, but I tend to think you do what you want in terms of where you position yourself in terms of care, and you will reap the consequences of that. Mm. Like if you are buddy... pally, and you know, you kind of, you know, you want your clients to kind of come to early morning yoga with you, that will appeal to a certain set of clients, and a certain other set of clients will think it's awful and won't go anywhere near you, and vice versa. If you're very formal, then there'll be a lot of people in industries who appreciate that, but there might be somebody who wants a little bit a more relaxed approach. You probably will favour somebody else. And I think there's room for all those approaches. I think you have to do what you're comfortable with. But I think what you're saying was very interesting, because you have to respond to the client. Go on, sorry.
I'm finding it quite a challenge with the Relative Paths Twitter feed. Because with my own business Twitter feed, my mere development one, I know I'm tweeting about, this bit of software's broken, or, hey, this bit of software's great. Or, man, this is a funny technical thing.
Yeah.
On my personal account, it's whatever, cars, homebrew, pets, family, distilleries. No, you know what I mean? Anything but technical, really, at all. But with Relative Paths, people are listening to us, and some people are listening possibly because they might get some technical output from us, but probably it's because they just like to hear the chat and the banter.
Yeah.
And it kind of extends. The reason I listen to podcasts is it extends my personal office of one. A little bit, you know, it's like, what are they doing now? And some of the people I listen to the podcast, I'm interested in the fact that they've been away and done this, or they've done that. And it's weird. We're kind of sitting on the Relative Paths Twitter account has to try and be a bit useful. Also has to tell people that are following what we're doing, when we're recording, and what we're recording, and what the subjects coming up are, and also some stuff we're into.
Yeah.
I'd like, if anyone wants to give us a bit of feedback, like stop posting funny pictures, do, or please or more post more. Pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just, I'd love to know whether what we're doing is right.
I guess like any relationship, I mean, sometimes it just feels a bit corny in a way to call it a relationship, but I suppose it is. You respond to both sides. You know, it's almost a bit like an experiment, isn't it? You think, I'll try this as an approach, and then you try it, and then you see what feedback you get, and then maybe you alter your approach.
Mm.
So I guess that's what that's, you know, with relative part, because we're still figuring this out. We're only, what, 26 episodes in, including a few kind of sub-episodes.
Yeah.
So we're still, I mean, even though we've been going for, a little over a year, we've produced not tons of content, so we're still working this out. But I think we're going to end up positioning ourselves, maybe nuancing our approach a little bit. And so I guess, again, with design, you will, once you build your website and you've had some experience of the kind of customers you get, the kind of customers you want to work with, I guess you learn how you're going to position yourself in terms of this issue, in terms of how much you care about people.
Mm.
And the thing I think, I mean, in conclusion, like my conclusion of it, is whatever approach you take, it has to be genuine. If it's phony sentiment, it's sickening. And I think, you know, it will come across. And if you're just doing it to get customers and you don't really care, you're probably going to end up having lots of very unsatisfied customers, because when they're calling you to actually care and you're just thinking, I just want to get paid,
mm.
could you go away now, please? Then, you know, you're going to be revealed for what you are. Mm. And vice versa, if you have a very, very formal approach, but, you know, you want to be relaxed, like eventually you're going to end up showing up at one of your customers' house with a six-pack and a pizza, like, hey! And they'll peer over their, you know, half-moon glasses at you, and you'll think, I've misjudged the situation. So, yeah, just do what you feel. Mm. Do what you feel is most comfortable, but as long as it's genuine, as long as you mean it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's pause there and do a read.
Okay. So, as you seem to be the one that actually reads amongst us, you have a read of the week for us, don't you, Mark?
Yeah, it's loosely tied to our topic. It's by someone called Jennifer Daniel, who I haven't heard of before, I must admit, but it's on Medium. And the read is quite a short one. It's about the fact that she participated in an SF, which I assume San Francisco Design Week Designers Debate Club. And she's arguing against the proposed resolution, Design Can Change the World. And I think it's all about how we feel, how we think about what it is that we do, like how important it is, like just weighed against the grand scheme of things. And she was saying that it's, you know, it's one of her interesting lines there is design can't even change the design industry, let alone the world. And it's about like what our expectations are about what it is that we do. Because in the end, we're building websites, we're providing a service, like we're not artists.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, we may not be philanthropists or world changers necessarily, and you don't have to be. I think, again, if you don't properly digest a lot of the output of social media, you may think that that's what you have to do. We all have to be out changing the world. We all have to be believing we can fly, and anything less just isn't good enough. Anything less means that you're unrealized as a human being. But you can just build websites. You know, you don't even need to necessarily love it that much. If it's a job, you can respect yourself and you can get a good living out of it. That's kind of fine. You can see you can get fulfilled in other places. And like our main topic today about caring, again, I think it's, you know, you take a step back and think about what it is you're doing. We're building a website. You know, a business is important to the person you're building it for, but it may not change the world and it doesn't have to.
I wonder if the industry will change as a whole. Massive generalisation, and I think I've made this before, but it started off as quite a young industry, didn't it? And a lot of the people in it are quite young. They're ageing, but they're still in the industry. I'm 3 years off 40, and I'm not planning to stop doing this for a while. you will probably, you will soon will have 65-year-old web developers. They must exist. I'm sorry if you are over 65 or 65 and you're building websites, but presumably you didn't start until you were mid-40s.
Yeah, welcome then.
Welcome, and well done. Wow, that was patronising. I actually didn't mean it to be patronising, but it was. I'm sorry. I mean, well done for changing a career halfway through your life.
Dig upwards, Ben.
That's still patronising. Oh, dear. Anyway, is it a lot of young people are very enthusiastic and passionate about what they're doing, and they think what they're doing is changing the world.
Yeah.
And as people get older, do they start to view things a bit more as, okay, it's just a job, and I might enjoy it, and I might be very interested in doing a very good job, but I know it is just a job. So I wonder if what we see around us, and a lot of people that we do follow on Twitter and the ones that are the limelights and the loud voices, are fairly young and very passionate about what they're talking about. And it gives the impression that we are changing the world.
Mm. If you're Sir Tim Berners-Lee, I guess maybe you are changing the world.
Yeah.
If you're working at that sort of level. But if you're building websites for the local fishmongers, maybe you're not changing the world. And you don't have to. And you're right. I think when you're young, you tend to be more enthusiastic. I mean, isn't patronising to say so. Maybe you tend to be a bit more black and white about things. But as you grow older, the more grey you sort of see. And plus, your priorities change in life. And I think it's interesting, although like we're all maturing, we're all still in T-shirts and stuff. So, you know, we don't ever decide to reach for our collar and tie in this industry, which I think is quite interesting. It's quite a youthful sort of industry. But I don't think being modest about what we're doing necessarily means you're not being idealistic, necessarily. Again, sometimes you read some of the stuff on Twitter and you know what people are trying to do. Like, it's full of aphorisms and things, and it can make you a little queasy because, you know, again, we're building websites. My phone has gone for my computer again. But I'm not entirely sure what I'm saying here. I think it's just relax. Just relax and be cool. It's okay to just build websites. It's fine. You know, we don't need to all be aiming for the stars, necessarily.
Actually, it's really nice to be really passionate and enthusiastic about something.
Oh, it is,
when someone is genuinely like that, and they're really excited about what they're doing. And when you're really excited about something you've worked on, however small or large, project or tiny little, learning some small thing about the use of Git or something.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. If you go on a tweet about that, great. But there are some people who it isn't real, is it? Or it doesn't feel real. Yeah. It feels a bit false. It feels a bit like they're trying to sell to us the lifestyle of being a web developer, web designer, UX-ish type person.
Yeah. Sometimes it is like they've got my little book of web design aphorisms sort of open at page 23 and they're just going to go work right through to the end, and it's a bit meaningless.
Yeah.
But again, I think you can probably... You get a nose for it again in the end, don't you, for who's being genuine and who's just kind of just wants to like fill up their Twitter feed. But I'm not being cynical about it because I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. And there is something magical about typing code into a text editor and then having it just like, pow, then there's a website and it's doing stuff and people are looking at it and things. And I think that's great. And like you were saying, like about learning something new on Git, which I did the other day. And, you know, I think I actually gave myself a little victory kind of like, yeah. And then I go to tell my wife, I'm like, actually, yeah, this is going to be meaningless to you. Not meaningless to you, but, you know, you don't know that I'm super pleased that I've worked out how to do a force push.
I said to Jen the other day about something about embedding images and things in SVGs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to make something self-contained, and I was quite happy that I could put script and styles and animations and everything in SVG and have it self-contained, really, so you could embed that SVG somewhere and it would do everything it would do without any supporting files. I knew that Jem would only be interested in the fact that I was interested by it, so I sort of said to her, I know this isn't something you're interested in, but can I tell you anyway? And she was like, of course. And I just told her, and she's like, wow, sounds amazing. I was like, thanks. It's like a little support.
And I think some of you can be enthusiastic that you're enthusiastic about it. But I think outside of our sphere, I don't necessarily expect that many people to be that interested or to care. Yeah. And that's fine. I think that's fine. I'm actually just want to say on that note, a quick thank you to the number of our friends who are not technical and who are not in the web industry and who loyally listen. Some of them have listened to every episode.
I'm a bit embarrassed by it. They say to me, oh, I heard you. I'm like, oh, why are you still listening? Why? It's so embarrassing.
Particularly for something really super techie and nerdy. Mm. And I just imagine like some of our friends pulled over in their cars, like slumped over their steering wheels, drooling. You don't have to, but thank you. But anyway, that is our very elongated read of the week.
Yeah. Elongated tool star, elongated. We've had it, yeah. Anyway.
Too much coffee.
Yep.
So this is our jukebox where we add a couple of tracks to the Relative Paths playlist. And as I was monologuing quite a lot back there, Ben, do you want to go first?
Yes. I haven't got a great deal to say about this one. We've heard from the band before, or the guy. I've forgotten what his name is. Anyway, it's Fortet, and it's called Pinnacles. And it's quite sort of housey. Quite a consistent beat, and it's a real uppery track for me. It's a right, I'll get some work done, stick that on. I enjoy it and I hope you will too. Hope you'll find it sort of motivational. Oh man.
We've been talking too much about this touchy-feely stuff.
We have. You guys will just enjoy it.
So mine is a short one this week. It's We Float by Dustin O'Halloran from the Like Crazy soundtrack. It's a film soundtrack. He's a composer and he does lots of... I've listened to a lot of piano music because it's very soothing and it's just quite, you know, minimal and nice to go to. And this is a super duper short track. It's only 1 minute 30. So I feel it's apt not to go on about it too much. So here's a clip. Our show. Sorry it's been a bit of a long one. No, we're not going to apologise. It's been a long one, but it's a subject we're quite enthusiastic about. Anyway, you can follow us on Twitter. We are Relative Paths there. Our website is relativepaths.uk. This show will be up with show notes as usual. There's a comment thread underneath. If you'd like to join in the discussion, we'll be happy to hear from you. And if you like the show, a review on iTunes in particular, or Stitcher, really helps us. It helps people to discover the show. So if you could give us one of those, we will come to your house and give you a hearty pat on the back. So thanks again for listening, and we'll be back in your ears next week.
Okay, bye-bye.